a double discrimination because I was like, you're assuming I'm not from here. And then also just based on my skin color, I'm guessing. And then also you're having a homophobic like hate incident. So it was just a very odd situation. I laugh about it now. In the moment, I was just kind of stood there and I was like, did that happen? Like I was like, am I dreaming? Did that actually happen to me? Because I never, nothing like that's ever really happened to me before. But when that happened, I was quite just taken aback. So I say all this to say that there's many different things happening, politically and culturally. And that I think all those things really do kind of come together and come to a head when you bring intersectionalities together.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it is shocking how much the anti-immigrant sentiment has risen over the years, and I think a lot of it is due to us like being pitted against one another when in reality we should all collaborate and connect. It is for sure important to mention that it is an intersectional issue too, especially when we're talking about queer South Asians, and there are multiple elements of discrimination there. But I was wondering, I guess, how does that impact your organization, and if there's anything y'all are doing within that to combat or respond? Because I know, people who are subject to such discrimination are also very resilient.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are ways that we are trying to combat a lot of this, these changes, and one is to offer support to people through our various social programming. So right now we have three different support groups that run monthly, one in New West, one in Surrey Central, and one in White Rock. And then we have a monthly social that also runs out of Surrey Central as well. So and so when people come to our peer programming, they can be themselves and actually connect with other individuals and really find that connection, that safety. But also when you're finding that connection and that safety, it's a way for you to kind of explore or really seek advice. And we have facilitators and coordinators and volunteers who are there to have offer at the least like a listening ear, because many people, their fear is that their family will find out and that they will get rejected and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of people really struggle with that. Even coming to our programming actively, they still struggle with that the second they step out the door, because they know that there's no turning back once you let it out of the closet, which is really unfortunate. But I believe we are working on a film, or a short film, kind of talking about or addressing that element of racism. I don't know how far we are in production of that film, but there are ways that we're trying to, as an organization, figure out how do we bring that social message without sounding very preachy, but also being effective to, just everyone out there. Because again, like what I think it's called erasure, right? Like the erasure happens. It's happened throughout history. And it continues to happen. So, the whole idea within South Asia that queerness is abnormal is completely a colonial mindset that was put on many cultures all over South Asia. Because when you look at temples of like South of India, there are depictions of queer experiences happening carved into rock on temples. So it's a natural thing. But because we as a society have collectively decided through different processes that have happened that this is now no longer normal, which was normal before, it really makes you think, like, how do you shift that overall cultural understanding towards something that's more progressive? And I feel like on a lot of and another thing is that there's very two aspects to it. There's a lot of this that kind of homophobia that comes from abroad with many immigrant families, which is unfortunate. But there also is that homophobia that is spread and created here at home in Canada. So many people who are born and raised here, and I speak from experience as myself, as having most of my family born and raised here, that it's a very ingrained thing in subcultures. So if you look at Surrey, for example, when we go out for outreach, when we go out for Pride Days at high schools or anywhere, Most people that come up to our booths, even though the overwhelming majority of students in Surrey are people of color, whether that be South Asian, Middle Eastern, like Eastern, East Asian, Latin American, like it doesn't matter. Our most people that come up to our booth will be people of Caucasian descent. It won't be people of South Asian descent, even though that school might have at least half of the population South Asian. South Asian people usually won't go to our booth because they cannot have they because it's like you can't be seen in a queer South Asian space, because then that will be something that was attached to you and potentially leads breadcrumbs to you later on in life. And I experienced that growing up. I never went to anything that was queer related at all. I would stay completely away from it, because I knew the second I would go somewhere, someone would take a picture. I mean, and that happened years later. Years later, one of my first experiences, I think, was at the Pride Parade, walking along with a share float, and someone, a relative of mine who I hadn't spoken to in years, somehow got a picture of me at the parade and spread it around my family. So it was, and so things like that do happen, and I can speak from experience of things happening. So it's quite scary.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it is important to acknowledge that a lot of these colonial heteronormative white ideals, like a lot of people have kind of absorbed them, and especially that's exaggerated by historical power dynamics and such. But I'm glad that, Share Pride is creating and carving out a space for queer South Asians to exist without as much fear. And you touched on, you have a large variety of services and programs, counseling, peer support, workshops. What services do you want to highlight, or do you think are, like the most accessed by the public or the most important?
I think honestly, all of our programs are very important in their own ways. One program that I'm really proud of, and it's a program that I coordinate every year, is our January Award, which is a youth leadership award that we award every year. And it's for anyone who's age 16 to 30, and it's basically for anyone who's working within the queer space. So whether you're an ally, whether you're from the community, whether you're South Asian, Caucasian, whatever, there's no racial requirements, there's no sexual orientation requirements, no gender requirements. It's just if you are someone who's working within a queer space, whether that be a nonprofit, whether that be a GSA at your school, whether that be through, like doing like a school project, anything, you are eligible to apply for this award. And it's just to really give that power back to people who are doing good out there, because it is really hard right now to do good. It's really, really hard because funding is quite short and quite cut and dry. There's more less and less funding for more and more There's less and less funding for an increasing number of organizations that are trying to meet the needs of varying populations. And the reason why the January Award is so important is that we really want to be able to give youth the power and the encouragement to keep going. So yeah, it's just if you just type in January Award on Google, it'll come up. And it's named after January Marie Lepuz, who was a Filipina trans woman, and she was very instrumental in Share Pride's origins when it was known as Share Vancouver. And a little known fact here is that so January was, even though she was a Filipina trans woman, she was very active in the queer South Asian space, and she was really she was kind of she's kind of she can be given the merit for really starting the first ever queer like South Asian like queer South Asian party that ever happened in Vancouver. It was called Bang Bang Bollywood and happened to celebrities many, many years ago. So she can be awarded that, and it's really unfortunate because there's a film documentary on January as well, but she was murdered, unfortunately, in her own home. And so that award is also to kind of it's an honor of her because of the work that she has put out for community, the support that she wanted to give everyone of color, and no matter what color, everyone who is struggling and who is trying to become their authentic selves. So the award is really, really inspired by her work.
Yeah, that's incredible, especially in the landscape that we're talking about where it is so hard to get funding and get, the proper credits. Yeah, just expanding a bit more on the programs that you have. I'm curious about Share Lotus specifically. I know that you have an upcoming event next weekend, I think, and I'd just like to know a bit more about, what it is, what y'all do there, and yeah.
Yeah, so Share Lotus, the reason, so Share Lotus basically came around as, again, is a response to us constantly evaluating and looking at our programming. So Share Lotus came out of a need that we saw as an organization that our programming was fairly cis gay men heavy, like our peer programming. And, we saw that there was a need for a space for queer women, trans women, non-binary folks to have their own space. Again, not that they're not allowed to be at, Dosey Project, which is our monthly social, or a Queer and Color support group session, or the one that's in White Rock now. But it's just to have that option to have their own space because those experiences are unique. They aren't the experiences are not always the same. So that group takes place once a month in New Westminster, and so yeah, we have one coming up. So what we usually do there, it takes place in Wildfire's Bookshop, which is a queer South Asian owned run bookshop, which was a very nice kind of a match for our organization to have that specific group there. And what we do there is like we do movie nights, we do painting, I think macrame is the next one that's coming up. So various different activities and various different community building specific activities for people. Because again, when you're trying to find yourself, the best way to find yourself, I think, is through community spaces like this, where you might come in, you could come in with a friend who's an ally and make some new queer friends and actually expand your circle, learn more about yourself. The way I kind of went into this whole, kind of jumping into the whole queer experience, which is going into a club and expecting someone to come up and talk to me and trying to figure things out, which is not really the best case scenario, not really what happens. But again, having these spaces really helps to ease your way into learning about yourself, accepting yourself. Because again, within South Asian culture, it's heteronormativity is so defaulted that it's basically abnormal to even ask a question. Why are we questioning certain things? It's there's no box for like anything outside of the gender binary, really. And so for many people, it's really hard, whether you're queer yourself, it's really hard to kind of get into that headspace and trying to really learn about yourself, because you're also learning about yourself, but you're learning about the community. You're learning about what is right to say and what is the best way to behave in a queer space. You don't know. It's a learning curve. So having these spaces is a really great social space. You get to have fun, you get to make friends. Unfortunately, there's no alcohol, which is totally fine. But these spaces are just there for people to hang out and be authentically themselves.
Great. And for our listeners who might be interested in, attending an upcoming Share Lotus event, where would they be able to find that information?
So if you go onto our Instagram, Share Pride Canada, all of our event postings are on there. And we also have them on our website as well, just sharepride.ca, I believe. And we also do have some group chats as well. And these group chats are essentially more like community boards, notice boards, for instance, where only the admins can comment and like and have control over. But it's basically a space for people to join, because joining us through social media is also a risk for many people. You could lead to outing. So many people choose to join our WhatsApp groups, and then they get to learn about our activities and events that way as well. We post activities, events. Sometimes we get like special discounts for like Pride season, for like the Whitecaps games, for example, or maybe like a Canucks Pride game. We share those things out in those specific groups. But yeah, that's also a way to get in contact with us and to get involved, or to get, just to be have your be added to one of those groups. You can just email info at sharepride.ca and get that info as well.
Nice. And for those listening, I will post those links alongside this episode on our website, cjsf.ca. And yeah, so just circling back, I know you mentioned the yearly film festival that y'all do, and I was wondering, what about showcasing 2S LGBTQIA plus films do you think helps educate and inspire?
So the Sundari Prize Film Festival is a really interesting part of Share. When you kind of mentioned that we have a whole film festival and specific staff dedicated to that whole new branch that essentially formed out of the Share Pride tree, people really wonder and kind of are they don't understand why that's relevant. But when you think about it, it's really relevant because it's a social justice it's a social justice themed film festival. And we have different blocks. So we have an Indigenous block. We have like a local filmmakers. We have a queer block. And having those specific blocks really helps to A, give representation to various groups that are often overlooked at many other major film festivals. But also it gives kind of it really helps people ease into learning and being open to more ideas. So many people who come to film festival for one film, they may stay for another block, and they'll watch a film from the queer block, and it really helps kind of ease them into that normalcy. Because I think a lot of times we as a just general like the queer community have had this thing over the years where if someone doesn't accept you right away, like that's not okay. But it also is a learning curve for, let's say, your family members who are so used to and for you to say something that's so n that they've never really heard of before. They need time, and they need then spaces like these, like having like a film festival where you have a couple gay characters in the film, bringing it up in a very organic and a very very nice kind of, a very organic way, really helps to bring those ideas and kind of help to mend their minds a little bit about, okay, so queerness isn't so scary and daunting, and it's all these things I heard on, like, on these specific, like, specific language channel radios, like, though they're saying that they're going to convert our kids and all that kind of stuff. Like, there's so many misinformation, and people take advantage of that a lot of times. So having a film festival that's focused on social justice issues, it really is great because you get to delve into different topics, different subjects, different themes. And that's kind of what the whole film festival was really about. And I believe we're going into our fourth year. So it's expanding and it's growing and it's been so fun. And I'm not just saying that because there is a little bit of a red carpet and you have to dress up fancy and go and take pictures, which I love. But it's a really nice way to build community and also give representation to, queer people that often are overlooked. And it's really big for local filmmakers as well, because it takes place in Surrey. It really helps the local economy, not just within the city of Surrey, but within Metro Vancouver, to kind of have something like this. It's just really something special.
Yeah, definitely. So crucial to have this queer visibility and education through queer art. Like, I think that's so beautiful. Have you had any, or do you have any, like, favorite stories from the Prize Film Fest, the Sundart Prize Film Festival, or films that you've seen?
There was a film, and I don't remember the name. It was the first year that we had it. Unfortunately, usually when our film festivals take place, I am out doing outreach all over the province. So I'm usually at a booth, whether that is in Squamish or Kelowna or in Mission or just anywhere really. I'm basically out doing booths during this time. But I think it was called Villaruck, I think, or it was a very inspiring film about boxing, and I mean the lead character, he was phenomenal looking, but that's besides the point. But I think just a lot of our films have such great nuance, like they're such great stories, and we've gotten film submissions from like countries like Bangladesh and like Kenya, like all over the world. And it's really amazing that people want to submit their films to our festival. And there's like hundreds of films that the people, like our staff and dedicated volunteers for the Sundar Festival, have to go and sift through and watch. But again, it's an enjoying experience because you get to go watch so many amazing films, and then it's so hard. I've been CC'd in many emails of people discussing how hard it is to narrow it down. But the film's stories are so unique and so beautiful. So yeah, definitely check that out. It's like it's just called Sundar, Sundar Film Festival. Just Google that and see. And I believe you can also check out many films, or there are links to those films as well on the website.
When does it take place? Is there a specific time or date every year?
It takes place in the spring. In the spring, whether like April or May, I believe it takes place in the spring, or even June. I think it's changed a little bit throughout the years just because of venue availability. And since we are only in the boat that like they had the third year going to the fourth, we're still figuring out where it is. And again, I'm not one of the main people on that branch of share, so I don't know too much. I'm CC'd on many different emails, and to be honest, I don't fully read every single email. But I do sift through. If my employer is watching, I sift through. But yeah, I think it's just a matter of where the availability is. But last year we had it at Guildford Cinemas in Surrey, and we like overtook the whole theater, which is amazing, and they were amazing partners. And also the North Delta Center for the Arts, as well. That space was beautiful. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, I'll be sure to keep an eye out for that. It sounds just awesome. And I should have mentioned this earlier, but I know that you've made a survival guide for queer newcomers and students, right?
Yes.
And I was wondering what inspired this and what does the guide include?
So that guide is that guide is just kind of my entry into share itself. I mean, back when we had just gone into lockdown for COVID, I was looking for a practicum experience because my practicum, it kind of fell through last moment because it was an in-person practicum, and I want to graduate. I was like, I've deferred in so many years for this. I need to graduate. So I reached out to Amr, because I had done a little bit of a couple of just a couple of volunteer hours, maybe a year or so ago for share. And then I had reached out and saying, hey, do you know any place I could do a practicum? And then basically one thing led to another, and I ended up having my practicum at share. And I believe I was one of the first, or one of the first few practicum students to really do a whole, like a full length, like full 400 or something hours or whatever it was, practicum, with the organization. And because it was quite the length of that it was, I was able to create that survival guide. So survival guides, yeah, it's called Destination YVR, just because and it's for anyone who's, and you don't have to be someone who's coming to the country new. You can be someone who's coming from like Halifax or Calgary, like don't know anything about Metro Vancouver. Just coming in, and it covers anything from like, where do you get like your BC identification? Where's like really cool thrift shops that are in the areas? Where are really good universities? What are the links to those specific universities, like queer resource rooms? Just it covers everything. I believe it's like 84 pages long, if I remember correctly. And yeah, we are actually, I have a practicum student coming in this fall. And I'm going to probably speak to her about potentially updating it because it has been a couple of years. So things change like literally like weekly or even daily. So some links may not be fully there. So I would really like to take a look at it again, and kind of have another practicum student continue it on and update it and kind of have it like to like a 2.0 type of thing. But yeah, it was really my first foray into share and kind of. And that was really what led me. I think after the practicum was over, I was invited over to like a team barbecue or something, I believe. I don't remember exactly what it's called. And then I started to meet a lot of the other people at Share who were either just starting out with the organization, kind of volunteering their time, or people who had just been, volunteering. Board members, volunteer the volunteer presidents and stuff like that for a very long time. And then it was just really great to meet people and just to really feel scene, because throughout the practicum it was very remote at home. But near the end, I was able to actually go out into community and really meet people who shared the same experience with me. And I was so shy. I can remember sitting there with a Coke and kind of like I was just like in my head, I was like, I was like, I'm going to finish this drink and I'm going to go. I'm going to say hi and then I'm going to leave. And I ended up staying because I've met a lot of people who are queer and not queer as well, like many allies as well, just people who are very open and wanting to learn. And they wanted to know who this guy was who created the survival guide. So it was just really nice. It was a really nice experience. So yeah, thanks for bringing it up. That took me down like memory lane a little
Yeah, of course. And look at you now,
bit.
like doing all this outreach. I'd love to see
Yeah.
it. Yeah. I think we are getting to the end of our interview now, so I just wanted to check in with you and see if there's anything I might have missed or if there's anything left that you would want to highlight.
I think I just really want maybe like the listeners to really know and to really maybe take home with them is that please don't be silent in the form of any type of discrimination or exclusion. Even very passive or just very comments that may not seem very like a big deal can mean a lot and have great impact on people. Again, I grew up in a in a I grew up in a place where certain things were said, and I don't know if this is something that you've ever experienced, but like when I was growing up, it was like so common to say that's so gay, but and to have to be like that's like in a negative way, like oh like my straw has bent and I can't drink out of my cup anymore, that's okay, like things like that. And it's like whether like if you don't mean it, don't say it. So like I it was a very hard, like growing up I was always hearing this and I was like, oh, that means that word means bad, like I can't be that. And people say it, like I still have many people, because again it's a cultural thing, it's a very cultural thing, and it's something that like I feel like a lot of kids nowadays are more privy to. But again, there are many areas of the lower mainland where that type of language is still used, and people just let it slide because like, oh yeah, they're not homophobic, they don't mean that. But then we shouldn't be saying it, because again, someone else could be around you who could be dealing with their sexuality, dealing with with their gender identity, dealing with various things, trying to come to terms with themselves. And then they're hearing things like that, whether or not it's intended towards them, it really impacts you in a way that you don't realize until later on. So just to please be mindful of the things you say and to just show kindness to everyone and in anyone that you come across.
Thanks for listening to that interview I did with Karn Sahota from Share Pride. And this is our last episode of 8 for our Super Summer Programming Series.
You can catch the other 7 episodes on the website cgsf.ca. Yeah, I guess we're not going to be on air every Friday morning to hang out with you anymore. So we'll see you in the future in our other endeavors.
Yes, we've had a blast making Super Summer Programming for you all, and yeah, we'll be on the airwaves somewhere around.
All right, bye guys. Have a good one.
Bye. Next up is Democracy Now!, so stay tuned for that. I don't think they're going anywhere. Bye.
Atención.
Yucasterio. Domingos, 6 a 8 p.m.
Chango.
90.1 FM. Yuca Stereo.
Yuca Stereo.
Atención.
Thanks for tuning in to our Super Summer Programming.
Catch us next Friday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Until then, stay super chill.